Hello, everyone. Ukrainian Spaces live broadcast is back for today. And thank you so much for joining us. And also, if you're listening as a podcast, thank you so much for tuning in. This show is 100% listener supported and exists only thanks to generous support of our Patreon family. If you're one of us, one of our Patreon family, thank you so much for joining and supporting in your continuous solidarity. But if you're not and you're curious, just check our Patreon page, Ukrainian Spaces, or check our website at ukrainianspaces.com to see what the becoming Patreon brings in terms of benefits. I think, Valeria, you had a bit of connection issues. I wanted to check on you. How have you been doing, and what you've been dealing with recently?
The reason that my connection potentially is bad is because I'm on my way home from a whole day of trying to organize and organizing and doing this a van to drive around central London to call on the public to boycott an iconic British gin brand, Beefeater, because we found out last week that they returned, well, their parent company, Pierre Nord Ricard, has returned back into Russia and started selling their produce there. So we're just trying to remind everyone, calling everyone to boycott them until they leave and until they stop being in a country that's basically invaded Ukraine. That was me. How about you, Maxim?
Today, just because before going on broadcast, I was on the phone with my mom. And we were chatting unusually about beautiful weather and it's spring and, you know, everything is super nice in Ukraine. And she was just standing outside enjoying kind of a very good weather for the first time in several days. And this is just a normal, regular conversation that you can have with any of your parents or friends. And then suddenly, of course, there is a siren goes off and she cannot enjoy a good weather anymore. She needs to find cover because she's not far from frontline. But while our conversation was so violently disrupted again, not the first time, I just remembered a post that I saw from one of our members of Ukrainian Spaces family, Stasa Lenchenko. And just this morning, he posted the next post. It says, "Second year in a row, I get nostalgic and sad in the weeks before my birthday. And I think a lot about how much we've been robbed of as a people by Russia's full-scale invasion. How many of the coming beautiful springs will remain emotionally unavailable to us? I have no idea," he says. And this is just absolutely, you know, the same kind of feeling I had in that situation.
We have an amazing guest today with us that has already once been with us. And actually, you know what I just remembered? I don't think that I interviewed Sasha last time because I was away and I think you did it on your own. So I think it's like, I'm very excited about this, basically.
We're going to make it right this time, a year later. Sasha was actually our second ever featured Ukrainian on Ukrainian Spaces. So it's always a special bond. And Sasha also comes from the same city that I come from. And also what is special about today, that it's going to be a chat of three former Russian-speaking Ukrainians. So this is also something special about today. Sasha, can you hear us?
I can. And it's such a pleasure to be on and to be speaking with the two of you. Finally, the two of you. We had a chance to actually meet in person with Valeria in London. And now we are properly online together. It's delightful. Delightful. I'm a big fan of what you are doing with Ukrainian Spaces, guys. So for me, it's an honor to be your guest.
Thank you so much, Sasha. And we, as you know, we have a golden rule. I know that you don't need an introduction, but we do have a golden rule of asking our guests to introduce themselves. And maybe since you've already been with us before, what else, what's new since we last spoke a year ago, and what have you been up to recently?
Sure. Well, I'm a special projects curator at the Ukrainian Institute London. But as all Ukrainians, I'm wearing many hats. And my other hat is that I'm an associate lecturer in Ukrainian literature at the University College London, School of Slavonic and East European Studies. So I'm making British kids or UK-based kids fall in love with Ukrainian literature. That's part of my job description. I'm currently in Ukraine wearing my third hat, and that's the head of a great grantee of the IWM Vienna. That's the institute which funds the project called Documenting Ukraine. So I'm one of the team of writers, creative professionals, authors, historians, scholars who are going to Ukraine or are based in Ukraine and are documenting the diversity of Ukrainian experiences as the country is withstanding Russia's genocidal invasion. And as part of this job, I'm planning my first trip to the east of the country in a day. I'm a bit, I'm excited, but also nervous about what I'm going to see there with Pan-Ukraine, a volunteers trip of Ukrainian writers who are going to various frontline cities, towns, villages, bringing humanitarian aid, but also interviewing people and writing down testimonies, making sure there is a record of Russian war crimes.
Thank you so much for your very important work, especially when it comes to documenting all those tens of thousands of war crimes. Sasha, the last time we spoke with you, it was all about educating the rest of our audience about the Ukrainian culture, the female voices of Ukrainian culture. But we also obviously talked a lot about language, because that's something that three of us here share very intimately as former Russian speakers, Russian-speaking Ukrainians. And I wanted to ask you the first question about our today's topic, connected to your gorgeous and absolutely, I think, historic essay that you wrote, because I'm being totally honest, this is the best thing I've ever read about Russian language and how Ukrainians use it and why. And in that piece for New Lines magazine, you say that is as in any imperial culture, I'm quoting here, Russian was shaped into universal value while Ukrainian stood for quirky local deviation. Do you think that most of your childhood you had, you know, this kind of an apologist energy when it came to Ukrainian language and your heritage? Probably maybe also were ashamed of it in some ways. Mm-hmm. Is that also true for you? Because it's definitely mm-hmm. true for me.
Thank you, Maxim. Thank you for this question. And you're making me tear up a little bit, because obviously when I was writing this thing about the Russian language and my fraught relationship with it, I was thinking about people like yourself and like Valeria and all the Russian-speaking Ukrainians who were brought up, as it were, in the enemy's language. And later in life, they came to realize what kind of weapon directed at them that language was. So if this essay speaks to you, it's, for me, it's the best ever compliment. I'm so grateful. Regarding this relationship with the Ukrainian language and with my Ukrainian heritage, I think that the most atrocious crime that the imperialist Russian narrative did was just making me doubt that Ukrainian was my language and Ukrainian was my heritage. I did not realize that Ukrainian was my mother tongue until later in life, because I was brought up in the Russian-speaking family, in the Russian-speaking region. And there is a paradox already embedded in this definition, because my and your, Maxim, region, Zaporizhia, is also the historical birthplace of Zaporizhian Cossacks, who are these proverbial Ukrainian heroes who managed to build a proto-democratic, proto-state in the south of Ukraine, and which was later demolished by Catherine II. So this Russian-speaking yet Ukrainian and bearing this Ukrainian trademark heritage region brought me up in such a way that all the Ukrainian legacy, all the Ukrainian culture, literature was associated with some kind of ethnic nationalist kitsch, if you know what I mean. And I did not realize that the Ukrainian language was and could be the language of high culture. What Russian imperialist project made me think of it was this language of, you know, hearty peasants and uneducated village folk. Nothing wrong with the village folk, as you understand, but I could not associate my native language, the Ukrainian language, with the language of culture. For me, the language of culture was Russian.
No, 100%. And if you don't mind me sharing as well, like as Maxim said, all three of us are, you know, were Russian speakers for a very long time. And I think, you know what you said, I didn't realize that my mother tongue was Ukrainian. Maxim and I, when we were preparing for this, we were just talking about like this concept of, you know, people in the West always are like, oh, what's your first language? What's your first language? And because the language situation in Ukraine has been so complicated, well, it's actually not complicated. It's very straightforward. As you said, it's like an imperial project of Russia to make us feel that Ukrainian is not good enough, not cultural enough, not whatever. But I've always struggled with this concept of first language because I personally, you know, I never actually studied Russian in school. Like, I don't know properly how to write in Russian, but I spoke Russian at home. But I didn't speak Ukrainian at home, but in school, I learned how to write in it. And then on top of all of that, like at the age of 5 first, and then later on in life, I also started speaking English. So now when someone asks me, what's your like first language, I don't even know what to say because I feel like I don't have one. So thank you for bringing in this concept of mother tongue, because I feel much more, you know, also, yeah, comfortable with that. And I feel like it represents how we feel a little bit better. But I also just wanted to ask you in general, I know you've written about this in your article and spoke about this as well, but why was it so important for you to switch to Ukrainian? Because, you know, actually I met both you and Maxim only, I mean, I guess last year after the full-scale invasion, and now we've only spoken Ukrainian with each other, and I feel like that's been so amazing for me to experience and develop my own Ukrainian. But why do you think it was important for you personally?
I think my switch happened in the wake of Russia's full-scale invasion. Not full-scale invasion, sorry. It's just becoming such an embedded phrase in my speech. It was, I switched to Ukrainian when Russia first invaded Ukraine in 2014, after the Revolution of Dignity. So during the 3 months that Ukrainians were fighting against their corrupt pro-Russian president and government, Russia was just dumping its propaganda on us. And it was then that I realized that something was terribly wrong with the Russian imperialist project, and that Russians I was friends with did not actually consider me human. And this revelation maybe came to me a bit too late in life, but I'm glad that it happened to me nevertheless. So when Russia actually invaded Ukraine in 2014, starting with the annexation of Crimea and then the military invasion of eastern Ukraine, I realized that what I considered my mother tongue, my first language, Russian, was used as a weapon of war. Because one of the justifications for this invasion was the fact that, this excuse that Russians were protecting Russian-speaking Ukrainians in the east of the country from the radical revolutionaries from the Maidan. So in a way, Russians were claiming that they were protecting myself, a Russian-speaking Ukrainian from the east of the country, from Zaporizhia, from myself, a radical Ukrainian nationalist who took part in the Revolution of Dignity. And in the wake of this bloody invasion, I realized I could not speak Russian anymore. So I started gradually switching from the Russian language to Ukrainian. It did not come just as, you know, one step. I took many steps. I started speaking Ukrainian with my friends, with those with whom I was comfortable sharing this language. And in my family, I still spoke with my parents in Russian, for example. And in workplace situations, I still used Ukrainian. So it was this kind of fluid linguistic situation. After the full-scale invasion, after 2022, I could not use the Russian language in any circumstances. In any circumstances, I get this knee-jerk reaction to it because, you know, it's for me, from now on, it's the language of violence.
There's so much I feel similar in the way you describe your situation, because I was raised as a Russian speaking person in Ukrainian speaking family, so there was always this disconnect, not understanding why the closest people in my family speak different language for me, and it took me a lifetime to understand what has happened and why it happened. But then I tried to speak Ukrainian after the first Orange Revolution, pro-democratic revolution in Ukraine, 2004. Then I switched back to Russian. Then after the Maidan Revolution, I kept Russian as a main language, trying to make a point that Russia does not own Russian language. And unfortunately, I feel like it was a mistake, because when genocide came, that language became the language of genocide, and they used the propaganda claiming that any Russian speaking anywhere, not only in Ukraine but elsewhere, is automatically a Russian person that needs so-called Russian protection. That line of reasoning was used to wage genocide on our country and on many other countries before. So I feel a bit of regret that that kind of realization didn't happen to me earlier. Do you have any regret for speaking Russian most of your life?
Yes, I think so. I would love to be this kind of person who was born in Vyshyvanka in a Ukrainian embroidered shirt and knew their motherland for what it was from the very start, from my birth. But that's not the case for me. Like Ukrainian identity, Ukrainian language was a political choice. And I do regret that I made it in my mid-20s because I could have developed my Ukrainian identity. I could have grew into my Ukrainian language deeper and I could have made, I don't know, I could have written in the Ukrainian language because, you know, anyone with the literary proclivities, anyone who uses writing as the main form of self-expression, of communicating, of making themselves understood, they would say that linguistic switch is a difficult choice. I would love to share a language with my parents, because now we obviously speak Ukrainian in the family, and we've lost a lot of intimacy, we've lost a lot of spontaneity, of levity, of humor, which was unfortunately ingrained in the enemy's language. So now our language is just bare bones, and instead of, you know, speaking from our hearts, we are making these political proclamations at each other all the time, and it's hard, it's difficult, and it's one of the many reasons that Ukrainians find it difficult to switch to the Ukrainian language if they are Russophone from the start.
Yeah, you know, Sasha, I for me personally, I've shared this with Maxim before. Mm-hmm. When I switched to Ukrainian, I remember being super frustrated on like work calls, or when I tried to write something, or when I tried to explain like an idea that I had that I couldn't. Like, to me, I because my, you know, vocabulary was not as wide as I had in English or even in Russian, I used to get frustrated with myself. And it almost became like I just didn't want to speak at all in Ukrainian, because, and I prefer to speak English, and I still do sometimes, because it was harder for me to be able to express myself the way that I wanted to, you know, at the age of 30. With my own kind of background in a language that is my language, which I just found really frustrating for myself personally. But I also just, you are an incredible writer, and I just was wondering, what is your relationship with Ukrainian now in terms of your writing, and do you write in Ukrainian, and sort of what has your, because speaking is one thing, but I'm just very curious about how you translate everything from you're writing in English to you're writing in Ukrainian.
Thank you for this question, and thank you for the compliment as well. I don't write in Ukrainian, unfortunately. I used to write in Ukrainian when I studied at the Kyiv-Mohyla Academy for my master's. Obviously, my thesis is written in Ukrainian. But after that, I switched to English. So for many of us, our route to Ukrainian is via another foreign language. So for me, it was English. My second language, my adopted language, became the language of my writing. And now I can express myself in writing in English much better than I can in Ukrainian, which is a bit weird, of course. When I start translating my English writing into Ukrainian, I feel the same frustration that you feel, Valeria. So, yeah, but it's all a journey, right? It's all a linguistic journey. I hope that we will arrive at some point of semi-perfection one day.
Guys, can we stay a bit on the topic of this intimate relation between our language and our families, and something that is, as you rightly, Sasha, pointed out, something that is often lost when we talk about language, specifically language in Ukraine. This issue is very politicized. And of course, I think we're good at explaining at the moment to the Westerners, to the foreigners, what's the deal with Ukrainian language in Ukraine, and Russian language, and the imperial legacy and enforced Russification, how it made us speak Russian without us choosing so in many cases. But you talk how it's not something that can happen in a day. You cannot switch to another language in a day. And also you cannot do that with the most closest people to you and your family that might speak other language. So you need to rebuild this even vocabulary of intimate communication with the closest people for you, and can take years. If not lifetimes. So after a year of explaining this very complex issue to foreigners, do you have maybe an answer to the question, you know, why some Ukrainians still keep speaking Russian, and why it's important to You know, how do you even explain that to the foreigners that always jump right away? Some of them jump to conclusions that it means that they hold certain political beliefs or certain ideological beliefs. Do you have an easy answer for that question?
I suppose the short answer is no. I keep going into these loops trying to explain this, but I'll do my best. So switching a language takes a lot of brain space. And currently, many Ukrainians who would even love to speak Ukrainian, they can't afford to lose their processing power, you know, and dedicate their resources to mastering the Ukrainian language while they are being bombed and while they have to solve all those logistical issues they face every day, and while they have to worry about their loved ones' physical safety, and basically while they have to go through the unimaginable for Westerners or just for foreigners trauma of genocide. So asking them to switch to another language is a big deal under the circumstances. Perhaps the switch will come later when they feel safe and when they have the comforts they need to make this switch. Maybe the switch will never come and it's the next generation of Ukrainians who will finally be able to speak Ukrainian and to reject the Russian language. I think that currently under the circumstances to judge Russian-speaking Ukrainians is unwise, unjust, and probably just unkind.
It's important for everyone to hear this, for both, you know, people outside of Ukraine, people in Ukraine, and in general. This is going to sound so cheesy, but we should just be kinder to each other in when we talk about the choices that people have made in the past year and even more. And it's just so important for us to keep sharing our own experience with language and our own experience with our discovery of why it's so important for us, why the language is so important for our own understanding of our own identity. And I actually didn't realize this. Like, I think this is not to say that, you know, you're not Ukrainian enough, if you don't speak Ukrainian. But I do think speaking Ukrainian really allows you to connect sort of with your roots in a way that is just on a different level to the one before. And that's been my experience in the past year. And actually, I think there's so much that the language can allow you to go deeper into. Reading and just in general, you know, I think we're all on this kind of journey together. And as you say, you started in 2014. I personally started a bit later. But yeah, it's just been pretty amazing to see how different people have taken on this kind of problem, not problem, but just taken on this journey. I think a lot of my frustration has come from seeing other people from outside of Ukraine cover the language situation in Ukraine. And, you know, repeating some of the stuff like Russian speakers in Ukraine and things like that, that Russia sometimes uses and justifies the invasion with and all of their actions with. But I was just wondering if you had any notes and tips for foreigners trying to understand the situation a little bit better. Of course, through your personal story, but also beyond that.
I actually think that personal experience is what helps us to, tap into our foreign colleagues' empathy. So when you share your linguistic journey, it makes them understand that they are actually looking at a formerly Russian-speaking Ukrainian who made the switch, and these are the reasons. And of course, you can try to explain how imperialism, linguistic imperialism works. and you can, you know, appeal to the experience of other formerly colonized countries who rejected the language of the empire. Or you can ask them why they don't expect people in India, for example, to proclaim English their first language and to invite an English power as a neo-colonial project into their country. So when you use such parallels, it makes them understand how ridiculous this claim is. It helps them to understand that Ukraine also has this colonial heritage, which they probably have not realized was such.
Yeah, I get often questions online, like, after the genocide, after the war is over, what are you going to do with Russian-speaking Ukrainians? Hmm. And it always irritates me, of course, kind of a trigger, because it exposed that people did not research and didn't bother to even learn a bit what it means to be a Russian-speaking Ukrainian in Ukraine. But I kind of developed this right away response writing that, okay, so what did they do with English-speaking Indians after Britain left? What did they do with English-speaking Irish people after UK was gone from Ireland? And even today, when we were sharing the announcement for the live broadcast, someone from our listeners left a comment underneath saying that they're so excited about this broadcast, but they also, because they're from Ireland, they can really relate to the stupidity of this question, because when people speak English in Ireland, they're not called English people or British, they're called Irish. And this is something that just people need to learn and educate themselves about the legacy of colonialism and imperialism. I also wanted to actually to bring some question from our Patreon sponsors, because once again, the Ukrainian Spaces is 100% listener supported, and our Patreon sponsors have this exclusive ability to ask questions directly. So this one comes from Ria Friesen, and the question goes like that. How many people in Ukraine are actually multilingual? I'm thinking of my grandmother, who grew up near Zaporizhia in the 1990s. She spoke several languages, French, Russian, German, Low German, etc. So is learning several languages something that is encouraged in Ukraine?
I would compare the only two countries in which I lived for a long time. That's the UK and Ukraine. And I would say that multilingualism is more typical for Ukraine than for the UK. Because, you know, English is also an imperial and a global language. So people are not put in this position where they consider learning another foreign language, unless it's just their choice. And in Ukraine, it's more common for people not only to understand Russian, for example, as the second language, even if they don't speak it, but also to have bits of Polish if they are in the Western Ukraine. And in our school system, as both of you probably know, it's very common to not only learn English, but also have the second language, which would normally be German or French. So I have very basic German thanks to my school education. Obviously, I have English, I have Russian, and I have Ukrainian. I know that many people in Ukraine are currently trying to learn languages of Ukrainian ethnic minorities, for example, Crimean Tatar. And I think it's very exciting, and I would encourage anyone who feels they can do it to actually try and learn the other endangered languages in Ukraine as a sign of solidarity, a sign of support.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my favorite Instagram account is a person from the West who is on a journey to learn Ukrainian and teach Ukrainian other foreigners, and it's a daily boost of so much positivity and encouragement, and also people learning Ukrainian words like privit or dyakuyu, and you know, foreigners dropping them in random conversations. This is real therapy, really, especially since I'm on my own journey of rediscovering Ukrainian, of reconnecting with it. You know, I can even say that, honestly, my memories of my grandparents became better since I started using Ukrainian every day. I don't know what about mental path or something that is happening inside my head, but I have better memories of them because of that, because they passed away, but this connection is now I'm reestablishing, and at least in this way, I can preserve their memory as well. Sasha, we will need to wrap up, unfortunately, although I feel like we can talk ages about it. But there's one important topic we haven't touched yet. We talk a lot about how Ukrainians are rejecting the language of genocide and Russian and switching, and how it's part of our important decolonization journey of taking back control over who we are, of something that was something that we were robbed, our own language through the centuries of colonization. But in your own essay that we started this conversation with, you at the end talk about the utility of Russian language and how it can be used, actually, even if Ukrainians themselves do not use it anymore. And I want to have a quick quote here. So you write, "The sound that holds me in my tracks today is the speech of the empire's natives resounding on the streets of London and Berlin. If Russian voices are to be heard loudly, let them speak inside Russia and against the genocidal war their country is waging in Ukraine. And if the habit of submissiveness is too hard to overcome, it's time for Russians to listen silently and think ahead how to undo the damage of their empire while Ukrainians are undoing the empire itself." This is wild. This is one of the, you know, most powerful parts of it. But the question that I wanted to ask to link to that, is there any future for Russian language, not only in Ukraine, but in post-colonial space? Or you think it's done forever and we're going to be figuring out new ways to connect with each other without the imperial language?
Thank you, Maxim. I stand on this. Russian has to resound within the borders of Russia in order to undo the damage that Russia is unleashing on the world. Regarding the Russian language in the future, people will continue reading Russian literature, will continue engaging with Russian culture, but we need to change the terms in which we are doing this. We need to look at this language, at this literature, at this culture from this anti-colonial, post-colonial perspective to understand, again, the damage of the empire. And this should be our sole purpose of engaging with this culture and with this literature for decades to come.
Through switching the language, you lose a lot of intimacy. Again, we talked about it with your loved ones and, you know, speaking with your mom. This is experience that I have speaking with mom in broken Ukrainian from both sides. Mm-hmm. It's not something that is actually very pleasant. So I really seek anyone's encouragement. How do you see the future for us? And how do you keep going? How do you keep trying, despite that at some points it's quite painful and quite uncomfortable?
Yeah, I really appreciate how difficult it is. And I think both you and your mom and everyone who is in such a situation should be proud of what they are doing, because word by word, they are undoing the empire. They are undoing the legacy of Russian colonial project. Even if there is, we've lost some levity and some intimacy that was embedded in our language. Today we have a new common project with our family members. We are actually waging this new weapon against our former colonizers. And I think it's something we can take pride in because, you know, the choice to resist Russia on all levels, including the linguistic level, is so important for us that we can make this these personal sacrifices. And then there is this linguistic journey that both Maxim and Valeria and me, of course, are sharing. And there is this new dimension to our lives, and just like experiencing it together and discussing it with your relatives, the new words that you've learned, and communication that is suddenly open to you, and probably a new writer that you are now reading in Ukrainian, in Ukrainian translation or in the Ukrainian original. It's something new that you will be discussing with a lot of excitement. And there is also this thrilling new aspect to our lives.
And thank you for putting it so beautifully. And I probably would love to talk about this for a very long time. Keep going forever. Exactly. In Ukrainian as well. True. To practice and to get better at it as well. But we're just so grateful that you took the time out to share your story again with our listeners, with our patrons, with everyone who has joined us today here. And we're just very grateful for you for being honest with everyone about your story as well. And as you say, your linguistic journey. I love that, by the way. Linguistic journey is super powerful and strong. So we just wanted to, on behalf of Ukrainian Spaces, thank you for being here with us. And we hope to have you back with us for another iteration of this podcast. But yeah, also, I don't know if you mentioned it already, but the course that Sasha is currently doing in Ukraine with Ukrainian Institute in London, Literatura, I signed up to it. So I'm going to be doing it to learn a bit more about Ukrainian literature. But yeah, everyone else as well, check out Sasha's page and you'll get to be part of all the amazing projects that she's leading at the Ukrainian Institute in London. So thank you so, so much for being with us, and really grateful to host you. Thanks, Sasha.
Thank you both. I'm just so, so happy to speak to you. You're a fantastic interviewer, and this is a fantastic project.
Дякую. And to finish, there's a last-minute message from our patrons in the chat. It says, I'm not Ukrainian, but I have my Ukrainian lesson right after this. And this episode is adding another layer to my linguistic journey. I will hold it in my heart and remember it every time I have a conversation with a Ukrainian. That's from Tina. Thank you so much. If you're listening it not as a live broadcast, but as a podcast episode, thank you so much for spending almost an hour with us and helping us on our mission to amplify diverse Ukrainian voices and decolonizing Ukraine conversations. Wow, this was such a great episode. I'm still a bit shaking. So many emotions. But if you also loved it and love the whole vibe, please rate this episode and leave a comment. But most importantly, check ukrainianspaces.com for other episodes, and also maybe consider joining our Patreon family for supporting our work, but also getting lots of extra bonus content. Thank you so much, friends, for joining us. One last thing is Slava Ukraini.
Героям слава.
Героям слава.
Bye.
Bye.